I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Two people here joining me today.
Let's just say facts.
Couple of us.
Two human beings are present in the room with me today.
I wrote these notes down just a day or so ago.
Beautifully. Hello, like F. Scott Fitzgerald would have explained the situation.
Two people who have
what's happening?
Two people who love Christmas music out of season. Apparently I wrote this late at night. Anyways, we are in the studio today and I am joined by two people who love Christmas music out of season. Two people who are wrong. Father Garrett Burns.
Feliz Navidad.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
What's the... I thought I was going to do that.
That was as good as my intro. And today we are in the St. Catherine of Siena studio.
Nice.
Solid choice. She is a saint that I sometimes describe these sorts of saints. I call her a prime number. In the sense like, you know, math, prime numbers, yeah. They don't break down in other things. There are certain saints, Catherine of Siena, France of Assisi. You just can't imitate them. They are a prime number in their own way.
One of one.
One of one, yeah. And we admire them and we can take pieces from them, but I don't know that anyone's called to be like Catherine of Siena quite the same way she was.
When you read Louis de Waal's book, Les Sieges de Heaven on Catherine, there are definitely some moments when she's in fights with people and you're like, I think I'm siding with the other people in this Catherine. It's like, I think they kind of have a point here. Now you're saying, you're right. I honestly get that. But they're making some good points about how you're behaving right now.
One of my favorite stories of Catherine Siena that makes me feel better about myself is, you know, people would bring possessed people to her to drive out the demons. And so they wanted her to see this little girl. And for whatever reason, Catherine's like, I don't have time. I don't want to do it. And so they sneak the girl into her room while Catherine of Siena is away, and she comes in and she can sense the presence of it and yells at them and then goes out a window to avoid seeing this girl in this moment. She's, I just can't handle this. This is too much. And she leaves through a window, comes back later that day. Okay, I'll see the girl now. And then she took care of the demon or whatever it was. But the fact that even with a great spiritual work in front of them, there just comes a point like, I can't do this today. I'm going out the window before I handle this.
I've been there.
You're right, exactly. That makes me feel a lot better about some of the choices I've made in parish work on some days.
Do you know why Bishop Jakels loves Catherine of Siena, right? Did you ever hear why he had such a devotion?
I thought he wrote like his doctorate work or something on Catherine of Siena. I think. I don't know, but
I was always curious about that. It's just, I mean, everyone is kind of like this of imitates her if she sounds amazing, but not like she's my favorite saint. But he was just like all about her. Even
I could
made up that we needed a new parish in the diocese, right? Just after this saint.
I could see Bishop Jakels in his sense of humor also relishing the fact that she had a particularly sharp tongue towards authorities.
Right.
I could see him that making him smile.
That's probably right. Yeah, just sharp, sarcastic, fireball. I mean, my favorite Catherine of Siena is she asked herself, what is my nature? It is fire. Mm-hmm. That's Catherine. She's just fire.
She's strong. Well, speaking of strong,
we
are recording our 50th episode of About 4 O'Clock.
Insert applause here.
Right. It's one of these buttons.
You always get that one. Hey. Oh, now they're laughing at us.
There we go.
There it is.
There it is. Found it. Found it. You'd think after 50 episodes, I'd label these, but I haven't. But in order to celebrate our 50th episode, we're going to have a little bit of trivia game, or I've devised a little trivia game for you two. And those of you listening out there can play along at home. So we will see who knows better. They're about 4 o'clock. Ooh. Trivia.
Oh, okay.
So first question.
Wait, what do we win? Is there something on the line here? Do we get one of your diplomas or something?
We recently, get to name the new studio first week of season two.
I like that.
All right.
I like that. Also, recently, we've received a stack of stickers of my diploma. So you get to name the studio. Whoever wins names the studio and gets a sticker.
Wow.
Of
hey.
The diploma. The gift that keeps on giving.
It certainly does.
So I've got 9 questions here for you.
Okay. Is this a first to call in? What's the
lightning round? I didn't buy buzzers, okay. So I am trusting your natural competitive instincts will bring the answer out first.
Garrett once punched me in the face when we were kids.
Just for no reason?
Yeah,
or
totally. There's sounds no about more right. to that story.
There's no more. All right. Question 1. Outside of the United States, we have been listened to in around 25 different countries, which is mind-boggling to me to start with. But after the United States, what country is about 4 o'clock listened the most in?
What's your guess?
Botswana.
We got one for Botswana.
Going with Japan.
No! You know that.
Gare is correct. We have more listeners in Japan than any other country outside of the United States. Again, I don't know why.
I've gotten several emails from
Okay.
Shout out to all our Japanese listeners. Yeah. Here's looking at you. Do you know what number 2 country is? I'll give you a redemption point.
Okay.
I'll even give you a hint. What continent is Botswana on?
Okay. Angola? It's on Africa. I mean, I know.
Okay. So you're on the right continent. You're on the right continent.
Yeah. There's a lot of countries in Africa. I took modern African
there's
history.
There's a lot of countries in the whole world. I'm narrowing this down. Okay. Last time I give you a hint.
My guess is... Zimbabwe.
Gare?
You said Angola?
Botswana.
You said Botswana.
Angola. Is Angola your next guess?
Ivory Coast.
Ivory Coast. Cote d'Ivoire.
Now, this country in Africa is popping off on vocations.
Nigeria.
Nigeria. But that's too late.
It's popping off in vocations because of...
That's right.
Yeah, that's
we
right.
We are... That's some imperialism right there. Let's take credit for the vocation boon in Africa.
Yeah, that's right.
Right here.
Yeah.
All right. Question 2. In the United States, we have listeners in 42 of the 50 states. Can you name up to 3 states you don't think we have listeners in? So we have 42 of the 50 states covered. What 3 states have not been listening to about 4 o'clock?
Let's just go back and forth.
Vermont.
I was going to say New Hampshire.
Garrett gets a point. Vermont's on there.
I'm on fire.
Not New Hampshire.
We've got listeners in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Let's go. Missouri.
Idaho.
Idaho is a winner.
Ooh, we're back. Okay. All right, that's kind of messed up.
One and
because,
one.
Because my focus missionary, Megan Ahern is my former focus missionary, who is a focus missionary in Idaho.
Man.
And so this, she's told on herself that she hasn't
you
been
listening. You need to give her a call. Missouri is actually the second most popular state
after Kansas.
Well, I just
didn't know. I was kind of thinking, do they have radio? Do they have podcasts in Missouri? I just didn't know.
Hey, do you know why a Missouri golf course only has 14 holes?
Why's that?
Oh, they've never made the final 4. Am I right?
Nice. Woo!
Up top.
Ooh, that hurts.
Yep, that's a good joke. Hurts.
There's an old Simpsons joke where they call on Grandpa for having only 49 stars on his flag, and he responds, "It'll be a cold day in hell before I recognize Missouri."
They used to play that at KU games.
Oh, really?
When they were playing Mizzou, and the place just goes crazy. Bonkers.
That's awesome. I say that around the house regularly. Like, that's one of my go-to lines. All right, one more guess. We're 1-1.
Yeah, Maine.
Rhode Island.
Maine is correct.
Yeah!
Maine is one of them. Rhode Island is not. Our other remaining states, Alaska, Hawaii.
Why do we?
I know. Those, seems like those
would
have been
not
the
have guessed?
Obvious. Wyoming, who we even shouted out to on the podcast.
Yeah, they still haven't come forever.
In. South Dakota and West Virginia.
Mountain mamas.
What?
Man, why didn't we guess Alaska or Hawaii?
You should have got that
one. Yeah, we messed up. Okay.
Gare's got a commanding lead here. What do you think is the most listened to episode?
First one with the bishop.
That's what I was going to say.
First one with the bishop.
Okay. I think our most listened to episode is Odillo's Bar and Grill. I think people just... It was a genius idea. And the haters
see
have
that
been telling,
title and they can't resist.
The haters have been all over it.
You're both wrong. It's more obvious than... It's our very first episode. Oh, okay. But when do I enter seminary? So not only is it the most listened to, but there is a huge jump between that episode and the next one. Like,
really?
The older episodes are gradually more, but there's a big, like, 100 listener difference between that and that. So it's a good one. Go listen to it again if you're wondering that question. When do I enter seminary? Episode number one, by far, most listened to episode of the podcast.
All right.
Now, what's interesting to me is that when you look at the episode, some topics I thought would have been more popular and some topics that are surprising to me because they are not as popular as I thought they would. So I'm going to give you a few episodes and you're going to guess which you think is the most popular of this list of episodes. So which is the most popular of these three episodes? Reasons to stay in seminary, service as way of discernment, or the abuse scandal and discernment? Reasons to stay in seminary, service as way of discernment, or the abuse scandal and discernment? Which is the most popular of those three?
I bet abuse scandal.
Reasons to stay.
Gare is on
this
fire.
This is absurd.
Reasons to, and they all came out similar times. Reasons much higher. All right.
Okay.
Next
I love
three
quiz games.
Episode on Father Stew, the movie.
Okay.
Dating and discernment.
Okay.
Or an episode entitled "The Most Important Thing." Father Stew. Dating and discernment, or the most important thing?
Dating and discernment.
Oh, but that hasn't, just because I would have guessed it isn't going to be helpful here. I think the most important thing, it's an easy title.
Dating and discernment. No!
This is bad.
Here's one. I'm only giving you two options. You can pick the same one if you want, but it kind of surprised me. Spiritual consolation or spiritual desolation?
Oh.
Which is the more popular of those two episodes? Spiritual consolation or spiritual desolation?
What do you think?
Let's just say it on three. One, two, three.
Desolation. Desolation.
You're both right. Yeah. People are more depressed.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Discerning between religious and diocesan, the Father Capon episode, or Bishop Kemi on moving assignments?
Gotta be Bish.
Father Capon.
Bishop.
Yeah, finally.
You got one. You got in. You're on the board. Friendship and discernment, looking for signs, or the idol of clarity?
Looking for signs.
Idol of clarity.
Both wrong.
Oh.
Friendship and discernment.
Okay.
And here is really the most important of which of these three episodes is the most popular.
Our vocation stories.
Father Garrett's vocation story, Father Drew's vocation story, or Father Chad's vocation story.
Gotta be yours.
Gotta be Father Chad's.
Father Chad's.
You are both wrong. It's the order. Father Garrett's released first. They're actually pretty even other than the standard step of which comes out first. Father Garrett was the first one out there, and his has more listens to than either of ours.
But people need to hear the story.
That's right.
You're the only one on this thing they trust.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, he's the winner of the quiz show.
I'm the expert, not on discernment, but on the discernment podcast.
That's funny.
Garrett goes home and just listens to him on repeat all night long. So that means first episode of season two, you get to name the studio.
Ooh, okay.
And
he gets a sticker.
And you get a sticker of my graduation diploma, which obviously is more valuable than anything else that can be out there. Today, our topic is priesthood as a call to intimacy. I think we've touched on this in other episodes. I think particularly in the episode of loneliness, we kind of touched upon it. The whole topic, I think you could relate to the bigger topic of celibacy. You know, we actually haven't done an episode just on celibacy, but that's probably a multiple episode sort of thing. And so just focusing the lens in on priesthood as called to intimacy, it is related to celibacy, and yet it's a different thing, at least in my frame of mind. I don't know how other people see it or not, but I definitely see it in my priesthood. The intimacy is facilitated by celibacy, but it's something more than that, right? I see my priesthood. Again, I feel like I'm just saying the same words over and over, but I see it as intimacy with God. I don't know if that's a common way to express that. I don't think of it as an odd thing to say, but it's certainly in my own mental landscape. If you ask me to describe my priesthood, first and foremost, it would be a description as intimacy with God. Something that I'm excited about, something that I feel growing, that becomes more and more, that makes more than any other part of my priesthood, makes it feel like an adventure in growing in that relationship and a deeper and deeper intimacy of God. And when I read the lives of the saints, I find myself more and more interested in that aspect, their relationship with God, than the things they do. All of those things flow out of that, and I just have a greater and greater attraction to it. So I find myself thinking about that a lot, the intimacy and my own relationship with God and how my priesthood facilitates that and is part of that. But I don't know if that's just me and my prayer and my own outlook on the Lord or whatnot. So I don't know if that's even in your guys' mental landscape when you think about priesthood, if your mind goes there or not. So
I'd say for me, it's grown more into that as over the years, a couple of years of priesthood. Maybe that wasn't how I initially saw, like, around the celibacy question. Much more often you hear like, for women religious, yes, they're brides of Christ, and so they have that intimacy with God, but we're like married to the church, which there's some truth to that, but I think there's a, I don't know, there's a top to that that doesn't, it doesn't work all the way across.
Mm-hmm.
And so there does just have to be this other level that I'm learning and leaning more into and experiencing more of, yeah, just in prayer and in intimacy with God. That's where I'm known on the deepest level. That's where I'm loved on the deepest level, and even love in return. I think that was, that's why I, in seminary, went immediately to the married to the church thing. Like that was where I'm going to give my time. That's where I'm getting my effort, where I'm going to sacrifice. But yeah, more and more, it's almost like the church and the people I'm serving is an avenue to me having a deeper relationship with God, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I wouldn't maybe right offhand describe that, be a main way to describe my priesthood, but I feel like I've grown into that more.
Yeah, there's an exclusivity in marriage. Of course, there's a physical, but a spiritual, emotional exclusivity. And you kind of pour out yourself in one specific, like channeled in a specific direction. Oh, I have a need to be, to kind of channel myself into another. And so that has been my experience of closeness with the Lord, intimacy with the Lord, vulnerability with the Lord, pouring out. Because otherwise, you're in a lot of people's lives, but you're kind of not on the surface because you go really deep in people's lives, but time-wise, you're kind of on the surface. Like you do this. And I've thought about that a lot even as a boss. Like what's most important, the main thing for one of my employees is like 8% of my time. Less than that. So there's all of these, you know, this one huge, massive moment with a person. It's like 3% of my day. Mm-hmm. It's their most important thing in the day, perhaps. Okay. That can just be exhausting. You're just like on the surface of a lot of people's lives and just kind of present in a lot of things. So there has to be an exclusive, intimate giving of yourself to another specific one, not just pouring out myself totally for my whole parish. That would get exhausting and unsustainable. And so an intimacy with the Lord that then allows me to do all these other things that I need to be as a priest, that's kind of what I found really helpful. Kind of this one-on-one, I give everything to the Lord Jesus Christ and we are in this kind of exclusive friendship, and then I can do everything else that I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Hearing you guys describe that, I think too, if I look back correctly, my experience was similar as you were saying, Gare. In the beginning, I saw it more as, yeah, wedded to the church and the church directing me. And that's still a great truth, but it's moved more towards this personal intimacy. And part of that is like you were describing, Drew, you know, you're serving all of these people. Well, I need to be able to share that with someone and talk those things over with someone. And that's the Lord that I go to the chapel. But one of the funny parts for me of intimacy, and this may just be my own quirky personality, I don't know how else to describe it, but like in my holy hour, I feel like I have inside jokes with the Lord. Just like with, you know, you'd see a couple and, you know, they give each other a look. Someone says something that they know exactly what they're thinking and things like that. I find myself in the middle of chapel and something happens and I just start laughing with the Lord about it because it's just funny. And as much as I feel like when that happens and I'm sharing with another person, I really, my perception, my experience is, Lord, we're laughing about this together. And isn't this funny? And it's something that I could tell the person sitting next to me at chapel what I'm laughing about, but it wouldn't be as funny because it's not their joke, but it's an inside joke that happens with me and the Lord. And I like to laugh. The world amuses me in general. That's part of my personality, but that's part of the intimacy too that I have with the Lord, is that it's not a super pious spirituality thing. It's we laugh about the same things in chapel, and that's, I like that. I mean, again, it's just not deep in the sense that it's insightful theology, but it's deep in that it's a vulnerability. It's a personal that my heart and yours are thinking along the same lines, or at least, you know, I feel I know you, that you can laugh at this situation and you know me, you know why this is funny to me, because it wouldn't be funny to anyone else, but you know that, and you can share in that humor and that joy in a very personal way because you know me so deeply and profoundly, I guess would be the way to say that. But it pops off as just inside jokes within my holy hour. I sometimes wonder if, like, the seminarians notice me laughing in the back of the chapel, like, does he ever pray? And, like, this is part of my prayer. It really is. Yeah. It really is.
And I think that's something that's evolved for me as well. Like, maybe my initial mental picture of this was, like, what is it? St. Teresa in Ecstasy.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's Bernini sculpture or whatever. And it's, like, That's what I'm going to be set apart for, and I'll have these greater spiritual delights. And maybe there's parts of that, or across, God willing, 50 years of priesthood, I'll experience some of that. But for me, it's been much more normal. And I, things like that in prayer, and just, I remember there's people like priests in seminary that I saw, like Father Xavier at Conception. And, you know, he didn't like, we kind of jokingly call him Catholic Yoda, but it's not like he like had the force or he floated around. And there was a priest at Mundelein that a lot of times I'd go into the chapel on my floor and he would be playing the piano, and he was very skilled. I asked him about that one time, like, what are you playing, or what are you enjoying, or whatever? And he's like, well, I'm just here like playing for Jesus, or like, you know, sharing. Jesus was sharing in that. So it wasn't, yeah, this like levitating saints, spiritual delight, intimacy with God, but it was just that depth of being known and sharing that friendship with the person of Jesus that's really present there in the tabernacle.
Yeah. And so solitude seems to be a vital aspect here. Like just being alone with the Lord and learning that skill, almost like a couple learns to just be alone with each other, and they have sometimes great conversation, and that's maybe what early dates are. And then you find just an ease of being around them, and then you feel like you can be silent in the car with them for 30, 45 right. minutes or a long road trip. And that's a deeper level of intimacy. And so the priest gets to learn that with the Lord, that I'm with the Lord a lot. I don't know how else to describe it. In the chapel, I'm with the Lord a lot. But while I was driving over here, I'm with the Lord. And when I'm on my scooter, and when I'm just kind of walking around campus, like I'm just with the Lord. And you get in this habit and this development of just kind of almost a constant conversation with a friend, like a spouses stay in touch throughout the day. I remember growing up, my dad just calling in the middle of the day, and I found that so strange. He's like, you'll be home in a few hours. He's like, just calling. They just check in. They just check in with each other throughout the day and chat. And sometimes they're just together in the same room. So the priest gets through that. And everybody, of course, has a certain level of ability to do that with the Lord. But the priest, just because of the time, because of how alone I am in a certain sense, and how much, like, no one else lives in my rectory. Okay, so there's just this aloneness with the Lord. And that's different than isolation. And that's even something that needs to be teased out maybe. But solitude is I'm alone, but I'm in conversation. I'm talking with the Lord, or at least I know I'm in its presence. We're together.
And I think that's where celibacy facilitates it.
Yeah. That's a great comparison.
Celibacy doesn't make, you can be celibate and not have a relationship with the Lord.
Super isolated and not.
But it can facilitate it too, because, you know, when I come to the end of the day, it's the Lord I'm checking in with. I don't have to, is not the way to say it, but I don't have the spouse to check him. I don't have the kids that I've got to do around. And so I have that time. And so my celibacy facilitates, because like what you were saying there, Drew, there's no replacement for that time. That's how you get to intimacy with the Lord, is you spend time with them, both intentional prayer. Okay. Set a time every day for chapel and liturgy the hours, but also in that sense that walking with the Lord at all. And that's where you get to like St. Paul, you know, pray always. He's not talking about, okay, every hour of the day you're in the chapel on your knees, but that even when you're out walking the campus, or I'm running a Quick Trip or that, there's a moment I can just talk with the Lord as I'm doing that. And time has facilitated that, and that regular use of that draws you into that vulnerability. It draws you into being known, gives you the opportunity to know the Lord. And there's no replacement for time in that, except for a direct intervention of the Lord, which is a rare thing, I think.
Yeah. And for me, I think you guys saying that, like the nightly examine is where it has really taken flesh, I guess. That was really, I made that a better practice. My first months of when I was a promised celibate, my first months as a deacon, and just had an image of divine mercy, and just basically every night would just light a candle and just take 5-10 minutes. And it was just like that sharing with the Lord of my day. And then it starts to blend, and you don't just have to, it's not a looking back on these things that happen and talking about it to Jesus, but it's like, remember when we were here together, and like sharing, just like you were talking about how a couple, I would guess, would do that at night, just share their day a little bit and then say goodnight. And so I think that examine is vital for cultivating that spirit of intimacy as well.
Yeah, I think of the examine at night also in kind of that spousal relationship, and I hope I'm not giving myself too much of an easy out, but there are some days where I sit down and I do a good night prayer examine, and like it's some great conversation with the Lord. And then there are other days where we're going to get it done. We're not missing it, but I'm brushing my teeth or I'm just thinking of bed, just like I would imagine happened with a couple, you know, some sure. nights they have a beautiful conversation before bed and they end up sitting up later than they planned because they're just that. And then some days it's just good night, everything go all right, yep, yep, and into bed. And I think the Lord receives that from me. Again, when I was a young man, I think I probably would have thought this holiness is going to be, you know, levitation, ecstatic every night doing night prayer. And it's not been for me, but there are still, I don't think the Lord is offended on those nights when, okay, we're a little bit more pragmatic in our approach to night prayer. Because it's not against him. It's just, okay, Lord, this is where we're at today.
Somebody at Conception, where we were there, said something to the extent of loneliness is always a call to prayer, which I really, that spoke to me and it still speaks to me. And loneliness as a sadness, but also loneliness as just like a factual thing, like I am just alone in this circumstance, always a call to conversation with the Lord. I've found that really moving and helpful in my life, that when I'm alone, it's an opportunity to talk to Jesus. And when I'm feeling the pang or just the reality of aloneness, okay, now I get this chance. I get this chance because I'm alone to have a little conversation with the Lord. And that's one of the great treasures I've experienced of priesthood and celibate life.
Yeah. Well, at its basis, I know I struggle to articulate it because I want to talk about the priesthood as intimacy, but again, because it is so intimate, the relation with the Lord, it's hard to put it into words. Just like, okay, yeah, you can talk about your spouse so much, but you can't always get at really what the center of what's going on. And I feel like even just in this podcast, I was stumbling or fumbling on how to get it started because I believe this. This is a center point of my life and my priesthood. It's an important thing. It's a good thing. It's a possibility, I think, for anyone that if the Lord is calling you to priesthood or religious life, to have it and one of the blessings he gives. And at the same time, I can't quite tell you exactly what it is because it's too personal. Not because I'm not willing to share it. It's just it goes beyond the power of words of to describe the sense within my heart and the way in which I feel drawn and at times that I... words fail. I don't know how to put it into words. I steal other people's phrases because those are better.
Well, and that's how a married couple often is. Like there's almost an inability to express some of the deep things and poetry and Hallmark cards and literature and movies have tried to do that, but there's a deeper level to it for a married couple. Like they know there's an almost ineffable, unspeakable level of it. And so it should be with the spiritual life and that of a priest, that I can explain it all I want, but there is a level of it that I can't ever quite get across of friendship. It can't ever just be described.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I'm going to start buying Hallmark cards for the Lord and just leave them by the tabernacle because they make one for every situation. Yeah. So
you're mad, maybe.
Yeah.
Sorry. Get well soon.
Sorry, I forgot our anniversary.
Good Friday.
I don't remember when I was ordained. Here you go, Lord. Sorry, I forgot about that. I could use that card.
This is a good plan. Hallmark cards for Jesus. This is a good business model. This is a good business model.
Conception Printery House, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Have we got an idea for you?
But they could do that with Jesus. And it would just make you feel better by writing this letter to Jesus.
Sometimes I wonder if you've missed your calling in life. Not that you're not a great priest, but you just have so many good ideas.
And they're all good.
I mean,
that's a good point, Chad.
You could be just, you should have been a pope in like the 500s when everything in the entire city depended on them.
Yeah.
And I mean, you would just be, you'd be out there playing pickleball with Attila the Hun and just setting things right.
Got a lot of good business ideas. We're losing money. This diocese is losing money, not letting me use some of these.
Hurry and take my money. No. Well, before we sign off, all of those ideas are trademarked, by the way. Before we sign off, I want to put a quick plug out for our upcoming Quo Vadis retreat. So if you are discerning the possibility of the priesthood and you are a young man who is either a junior in high school, age junior in high school through 30, I would strongly encourage you to consider attending our Quo Vadis retreat December 30th through January 1st. Father Brett Brannan will be our retreat director. You may have heard of him before. He wrote the now famous discernment book, To Save 1,000 Souls. And so what better way to start the new year than really taking some time with our Lord to discern your vocation? So if that is of an interest to you, you can go to our website at Catholic Diocese of Wichita website and sign up for Quo Vadis or call our vocation office and we can get you signed up for that. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word goes to Gare today.
This comes from Father Raniero Cantalamessa, who was a papal preacher for a long time, and I think speaks to a little bit something Chad referred to, just about a celibacy facilitates maybe this intimacy with God. It doesn't make it necessarily flow. It opens us up to it. So he says, "The undivided heart is a good thing as long as you love somebody. In fact, a divided heart that loves someone is better than an undivided heart that loves nobody."
See you next week.